Welcome to the Life Outdoors Podcast. Our mission is to educate, entertain, and motivate. We speak life into and through the outdoors. Now join your hosts, Nate Bailey and Gage Bailey, as we navigate through the mountains of this life. The Life Outdoors exists to encourage you to get outside, because we've seen God's powerful attributes in nature, and we've been left without an excuse to know that there is a God. This knowledge has edified us. It's created something inside of us that makes us want to be the humans that we were created to be. So, with that, we want to pass that on to you, because we believe that God has put something wild inside each human being. So we would like to pass on that education and like to show you how to stoke that in yourself, and how to actually join in the outdoor journey and be successful at it. And also, we would like to teach you what we have found about our own souls through this experience of the outdoors. So that is what we're doing here at the Life Outdoors. We are here to encourage, to edify, and educate. And we believe that each and every one of you has something inside of you that wants to experience this. So with that said, if that is you, go check out our website for more resources to follow. Or maybe you've already experienced this, and maybe you want to be a part of the Life Outdoors and you want to help spread this. Go to our website, thelifeoutdoors.org. And that's the Life Outdoors with a Z on the end of the outdoors.org. Now, let's get on with our show. If you came by and saw us at the Pacific Northwest Sportsman Show in Portland this year and picked up a pamphlet and have a number in the pamphlet, do not forget to join us April 1st at 6:30 p.m. live on the Life Outdoors Instagram channel. Is it a channel? Instagram, whatever, the Life Outdoors, and see if you are going to win that Browning 300 Win Mag or a Wilderness Packs pack. Now, you guys, if you picked up one of those pamphlets, all you have to do is be there with the pamphlet, and we're going to do a random number generator. So, I hope it's you, and I hope everybody shows up. That way, we have a winner really quick. Or else we may be going through some numbers, because we handed out 1,000 of those puppies. And depending on how many people show up there depends on how many numbers we're going to have to go through before somebody wins it all. So show up over there. It was a great time. We're glad to meet you. Hopefully you win. Have you been sitting on the couch? Are you in the kind of elk hunting shape that you want to be in? Or maybe you were never in the shape last year and it just carried over to this year like me. Well, the Life Outdoors is going to do something to change that. We have put on the Rut Ready Ruck March to both help you get up and motivate you to get out and get ready for elk season, but also as a fundraiser for the Life Outdoors so we could get more people outdoors this year. The way it works is it's kind of like a walkathon. So you'll go around, ask your family, friends to sponsor your miles. And what you'll do is you'll keep track of the miles that you walk on some kind of app. It doesn't matter which one. I don't care. You could use, you know, Onyx. You could use Strava. You could use anything. But for the month of June, you'll have to put on 50 miles. And if you do that and then you raise $50 from your sponsors, you'll get a t-shirt from us. It's a cool t-shirt. And you'll also be entered into a drawing of all sorts of great prizes. Some of them from Worksharp, from Lacrosse Boots, from Ready Pack, and all these great sponsors that are helping us with this march, Ruck March. So all you got to do is go over to thelifeoutdoors.org, and that's thelifeoutdoors with a Z on the end, .org. And sign up. And once you signed up, once June rolls around, you just start keep tracking your ruck march. Now, one thing I have to add here is, guys, you have to have at least 40 pounds in your pack, and gals, you have to have at least 30 pounds in your pack. So once you register, you'll be a part of the group. And I'll probably create a Facebook page to follow this or something like that so we could follow each other and keep encouraging each other. But please join us. It's going to be a great time. I'm sure it's going to help our elk seasons, and it'll help get more people knowing who God is through the outdoors. I don't even know how to start this podcast. I've pushed the record button 5 different times, but I think I owe it to the guys that have followed Barebow Hunter and who have followed some of the things that I've said about compound bows and my feelings on compound bows, because quite honestly, some of you guys are probably thinking that I was anti-compound when that wasn't the case. I actually am going to be shooting a compound this year, and I'll be hunting with one this year. And there's several reasons why, and they're very logical reasons. And I think that's why I'm coming on this podcast, is to get it out there on some of these reasons. And I think it's going to help you, the guys that are still hunting with their traditional bows, the guys that are hunting with compound bows, the guys that are hunting with crossbows, the guys that are hunting with muzzleloaders and rifles. This is all something I think we need to take into account. And I think we need to be honest with ourselves. So this podcast is going to be brutally honest, and I'm going to pour myself out here. Some of you guys are going to like it. Some of you guys are going to write me off. Hopefully Compton's doesn't kick me out of the traditional bow community. And I know there's going to be some of you guys that do. I honestly know that there's going to, because the way the traditional bow community can be, that's one of the big turnoffs about the traditional bow hunting community, is there are some people within that community that I don't know, they're going to just write me off. But with that said, it all comes down to who we are as hunters. I'm going to let the cat out of the bag right at first, and then I'll go back through and explain what I mean by this, because I think it's important for us to engage in as hunters, complete hunters, not just traditional bow hunters, or not just compound bow hunters. It's all hunters. The first thing we got to realize is, what is the definition of a hunter? What is defined as a hunter? You know, that comes down to a lot of different things nowadays. When you really look at it, are we sportsmen? Is this a sport? If it's merely a sport, man, I'm not too sure I want to be a part of it. Quite honestly, because, you know, the taking of life for sport, really, don't get me wrong, there's an exhilaration for it. But when you start talking sport, that moves it into a whole different realm to me. That's like saying that I'm going to go play football and I want to win, right? And I'm going to be super competitive, which I have no problems with sports. I have zero problems with sports, but I want to differentiate hunting from sport. Hunting is something that is richly involved in human beings. We have been hunters from day one. We have used hunting to keep us alive. Hunting is something that some cultures have used as a way of defining themselves. And I think hunting is very spiritual. Not that sports can't be a spiritual thing, but sports are sports. Hunting is something completely different than that. And we have to approach it like that. That's why I have a hard time calling myself a sportsman. That's why I have a hard time calling myself, I'll call myself an outdoorsman. But and you guys might think that I'm just cutting hairs here and splitting hairs, but words form worldviews, and worldviews form the way that we act. So these things are very important, and I think we need to address them as the hunting community, because I think, quite honestly, this is how we're losing relevance in the modern culture, in this culture that is so fake and doesn't rely on truth at all. I think that we're losing a lot of pull because we're calling ourselves sportsmen. We should not call ourselves sportsmen. I just don't believe that. I don't believe that hunting is a sport. So what is hunters? What are hunters? What does it mean to be a hunter? Well, I think there's a lot of different ideas on that, but I think the one of the biggest things that you and I both can understand about a hunter is if you defined a hunter, say 250 years ago compared to today, and say you defined a hunter that was, maybe in America 250 years ago, is that hunter would he look different than, say, what the hunters in Scotland looked like 250 years ago, 200 years ago? See, this term hunter is something, it's something that we need to define, because we're losing people, and we're losing a lot of the hunting opportunities and rights across the world. And the funny thing is, man, just a few hundred years ago, every society was a hunting society. If they weren't, they were dying to some point, you know. And so I think it's a big distraction to call it a sport, because we're pulling away from what we were built as human beings, that where we came from was a hunting tradition. So the definition of hunter, the dictionary, Oxford Dictionary, says it's a person or animal that hunts. That's what a hunter is. Now, what's that mean? What's that mean? Does somebody just hunt for hunting's sake? Or are we hunting to feed our family? Or are we hunting to just put a head on the wall? I mean, because that's what a lot of people think that hunters are. Are we hunting just for the adventure of it? See, these are all things that we have to define. And the reason I say we have to define this is because we have to start understanding that our choice of weapon is going to be a part of what this worldview looks like of who hunters are. I hope I'm not losing you guys, and I hope I'm making a case for the fact that we need to be able to think this stuff through if we're going to be hunters. And I know a lot of you guys just want to hunt, but we live in an age where we're going to have to start talking, and we're going to have to start letting other people know what hunting is and why it's important. I read somewhere over 90% of Americans are meat eaters. Now, I don't know how many Americans are hunters in the United States. I'll look it up here real quick. But the fact that 90% of humans in America are meat eaters says it's a truth that I don't think a very many Americans really or there would be a lot more meat eaters, I think, across the world if people could actually afford to do it. Or afford to buy meat, or afford to get out and get their own. But when we start unveiling these truths about who we are as a society, I think we're being jaded into thinking that, say, a McDonald's hamburger really doesn't come from an animal that was once alive. And I think that's part of the problem with people trying to get rid of hunting, and people trying to be hard on hunters. But I think that is something that we really need to look at as far as who we are as just humans. I think that's a pretty amazing fact that 96% of people in America eat meat, and only 6% of people in America are hunters. That goes to show the mass majority of people in the United States have probably never seen an animal be killed for food. That's the vast majority. I mean, even if 20% more people have seen an animal die for food, that would still leave, close to 70% of the American public that has not seen this, that are jaded to it, that have had the wool pulled over their eyes. And I think that's that's an important thing when we start talking about these things about hunting. And it all goes back to, why do we hunt? And is it a sport? And we should really look at that. So let's go back and let's talk about my journey. Because I think it's pretty imperative as to, man, I grew up in a small town. There was nothing for me to do outside of the outdoor type stuff. I had one TV channel that would actually come in, and the stuff that was on it wasn't really that good. So I spent majority of my childhood outside. And there was always a method to what we were doing. And I started bow hunting for big game. I started way earlier, but for big game, I started bow hunting in the 80s. I started with a recurve bow, went to a compound bow for one season, had a big problem with the compound bow that season, had my sights fall down, and then I couldn't recover, and I missed an animal. And so I just said, the heck with that. I could have shot that animal 100 times over with my recurve. But this was in 1980s. And as I was going through my hunting career, I didn't hunt for a couple years because I hunted up in Alaska because I was in the Coast Guard and I was away from hunting for quite a little while with a bow. I hunted with a rifle up in Alaska. And then I got home and hunted with a rifle down here. And then I got back into bow hunting and picked up my recurve and started bow hunting again here. And so I was with the traditional bow hunting community ever since. And that was after I got out of the Coast Guard, early 90s. And so, well, no, it would have been mid-90s. So the mid-90s bow season was completely different. I had been rifle hunting a couple times for elk, and it was easy. I don't want to say I don't want to belittle rifle hunting because it's not I know, and it's not all easy, and it's not all ponies, you know, and rainbows or whatever. It's not all easy, right? But in the areas that I was hunting in, the amount of hunters that were out there and the amount of elk that were around and the little bit of pressure that they had, rifle hunting for elk was really not that hard. And so I took up bow hunting to one. So the reason I say that is because our seasons for elk hunting, if we hunted the first season, which was in November, I think it was like usually like the first through the sixth, it was only 5 days of hunting, and I love to hunt. And the second season was a little bit longer, but normally it would take us 3 or 4 days and we'd fill our tags. And I love to hunt. I wanted to be out there more. So I started bow hunting. And another thing that happened is my uncles, one of them lived over in Eastern Oregon. And he decided that during rifle season deer, we'd shoot our deer pretty early in the season. And then back then, man, you could find a mule deer that was a good mature mule deer pretty easily. Nowadays, you could probably spend all season and never see one. But back then, that's how it was. But he would, after he shot his deer, he still wanted to be in the woods. So he made these elk bugles out of like a hot water hose, a copper. You just twist them up and they'd whistle. And we were calling in bulls. And I would sit there and watch these bulls come in. And I kept thinking to myself, you know what? A person could shoot one of those. It would be pretty easy because, I mean, they came, you know, with a bow. So I decided, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start bow hunting those, and I'm going to start calling them. And I did. And, you know, the whistles worked for quite a little while. You couldn't grunt through them. You just whistled. And, I'd follow everybody. I'd watch. Man, Primos wasn't even out then. Larry Jones was. He just started coming out. So, like, I bow hunted a couple years before his stuff started coming out. And Ed Skiri and the old guy named Abe over on the coast, he talked and taught a lot about elk hunting. And then just trial and error, right? I mean, we called in bulls, and we didn't even know what the heck we were doing. We just got lucky. But back then, it was a whole different world. you were the only guy for 20 miles that had a bugle in his hand out there bugling elk, and it was not like it is now. There might be other bow hunters out there. You come across guys that were bow hunting, and none of them, they were just sneaking on bugling bulls and stuff, and they'd sneak into the herd, and they didn't really do what we do nowadays. And there was none of this aggressive elk hunting, is what we like to call it. There was none of that, really. I mean, the guys that you saw on TV, they would set up and call elk into them, and the elk herds were just, it was just a whole different dynamic. Nowadays, elk are a little bit more pressured. And I'm not going to say they like evolved to be smarter. That's not what happened. What happens is opening day comes, the elk are starting to bugle, and they encounter five guys with a bugle over, you know, the period of one day. Well, that starts messing with an elk, and that starts making them a little leery of bugling, or a little leery of bugles. And then especially if you get guys that are just don't know what they're doing, and they're spreading their scent all over the top of an elk while they're bugling. And so it makes elk, I don't know if you're around livestock very much, but if you're around livestock, you can affect their behavior just by your actions a lot. My goats, I have to, and I affect it on purpose, but if they are pretty hard-headed, and elk are too, but I could make them change their behavior by constant badgering, right? So if, say, they're trying to get into the chicken coop, which my goats like to do that quite a bit, it takes me a while to keep them from wanting to get in the chicken coop, but if I keep pushing on them, they're eventually going to quit trying to get in the chicken coop. It's the same thing with elk, guys. I know that they have instincts that they have to bugle, and I know that, you know, when cows come into heat, it changes that, but always in the back of a bull's mind is that pressure that they feel from the first of the season all the way through to the end of the season. Things have changed, and it was very apparent to us last year. Things have changed in the last 3 years. Since COVID, the amount of hunters that are in the areas that I hunt has changed a ton. And I think also, I think the hunters are becoming better because of the tools that we have. And so with that said, Gage and I both picked up a trad bow last year. And, well, you know, I've hunted a trad bow for quite a while, but Gage picked up his last year. And needless to say, we got into a lot of elk. We were in elk every day that we hunted last year. And we were never able to get a good, clean shot on any of the elk. And which is kind of strange. Most years it's pretty, you know, once you're into elk, the hardest part's usually finding them. But they were all within that 35 to 45 to 50 yard range. Stuff that was just outside of what we thought was ethical shots. I mean, if we would have had different circumstances, yeah, 35 yards, we probably would have tried, but the circumstances didn't give us that. But with that being said, the elk have changed, and the pressure has changed. And I don't think it's the elk so much that have changed. I think it's the pressure that has changed. Gage and I, we busted our butts over in Eastern Oregon for a couple weeks. And I mean, the elk were just being very vague and didn't want to work with us very well. They were bugling pretty well, but we knew the partial reason was because, you know, they were, the herd that we were on weren't being hunted too hard, but they were being hunted. They did have somebody shot one of the cows out of them with a rifle. And I'm not sure what that all is, but we found a scope cover and a shell next to the carcass. I think it was might have been a tribal person, actually. But that same herd, we'd been around them a little bit and just not really bugging them a bunch because they just weren't turned on. And the bulls in the herd just weren't, I mean, they would answer you, but they weren't doing anything. You know, when a bull gets really fired up, you could tell. And so we didn't want to mess that up. We didn't want to mess them up until they were ready to play. Well, that day came, and we had been following them. We had camp on our back, and we followed them that evening, and they were just going crazy. We got in on them. It started getting late, so we backed out, and we camped right there that next morning. We camped right close to them, listened to him bugle all night long, tearing stuff up, several bulls in the bunch. We knew there was a hot cow in there. We knew that, you know, it was on. The rut was happening. Gage and I were just ecstatic, and couldn't hardly sleep that night. So we put our stuff together and started trying to get some sleep. Got up early the next morning. Bull was still over in the same spot. We gave him a couple really good locating bugles to make sure that we knew exactly where he was. We know the area pretty well. We've hunted it for years. And so we decided that we're going to go and we're going to cross over and we're going to go right in on the canyon. So we were just kind of on a roller on the other side of the canyon. And the place that we hunt over there doesn't have a whole, it's got a lot of roads. And so as we're bugling this, we bugle and we come across and we're starting to follow down into the canyon and we hear bugles off to our left. And we could tell, you know, it was a good bugler. Whoever was off to our left was bugling. But they had picked up on us following this elk for quite a little while. And so they came in from below us. And they were coming up the canyon. And the wind was all wrong for them. But there we saw them. We could see them across probably some of these big scabs over the, where we were hunting or you know, miles long. We could see these guys, and it was probably, a good mile below us. And the wind was blowing down the canyon, just like it does in the mornings, right? And these guys were going in right over where the elk were, right in the elk's wind, and bugling their way in. And the elk were down below, and we had purposely got up above the canyon so we could come down in them and get them on a side wind. I don't know if you guys, you know, when you're hunting, you always try to get those elk on that side wind, because in the mornings in those canyons, especially when it's warmer up high, it's going to be cooler in the canyon. So all that wind is going down the canyon. So as the day heats up, the wind of course starts going back up the canyon. But in the mornings, our wind always starts going, our thermals always go down the canyon in this one canyon. So it was pouring down the canyon. All that hot air that was up on top was rising and well, let me see how that went. Anyhow, the wind was going right down in the canyon and we were catching that wind. So we were up above the herd in the canyon and these guys went straight in on them because they saw us. They saw us crossing over to try to get in there. They heard us. I don't know if we're the ones that called them in, but there was five guys, man. And these five guys just almost bum rushed those elk. And they went down inside there and I don't know how close they got to them, but the elk, we had part of the herd coming towards us and I heard arrows flying. You know, you can tell when people are shooting and I'm not too sure whether they got an elk or not down there. But the fact of the matter was they pushed the herd out and it came right past us. We tried to stop them. They were within range. We couldn't get them to stop. And you know, having a recurve, you're going to have, I mean, even a compound, you're not going to shoot at an elk that's moving. So with that said, we were really frustrated for one, because these guys were being super aggressive. They wanted to get to the elk before us. It's public land, you know, whatever. But at the same time, whether they knew it or not, they did exactly the wrong thing. They should have got the wind right to get in on those elk and then get up above them and call them and then realize that those elk are probably going to go up that canyon to bed during the day. So, you know, cut them off at the pass and then call. But that was not what was going on here. So, Gage and I knew where those elk were going to go. They had pressure. They smelled us for sure when they came by and then and then we got behind their wind. So we backed out and then walked another, it's about 4 miles up to where I knew that they were going to go, where they usually bed. And so we ended up going up there and got almost to where their bedding ground is, threw out a location bugle, and sure enough, that bull answered. Now, I wasn't completely convinced here that it was the bull. Because if it was me and I was those other five guys, I would have backed out, went up the other side of the canyon. If they knew anything about the elk in there, go up the other side of the canyon and then drop in on them up on the other side. And that's where that bull was bugling from. So I kind of wondered if that was – it was way off. So you couldn't really tell, you know. And Gage, to his credit, man, was like, no, that's a bull. And so I was kind of like, well, okay, whatever. So we had to cross the canyon to get over to where that bull was bugling. And I was giving Gage crap the whole time, saying, oh, we're just chasing, you know, some hunter up here. And he's like, no, man, I'm telling you, that's – so we got up there, got across, and the bull was down in the canyon. And once we got up on the flat on the other side, and then it's kind of a canyon – there's a spot in there where all these canyons come together, and it's like a bowl in there. And that's where they like to bed down. And rightfully so, because they got so many escape routes. And then, of course, there's so many different elk that could hear in that area. So these elk like to sit in there because that's kind of a place where they could call cows in, and it's kind of a place where the bulls could know that something's coming in on them. Anyhow, we get across there, and that bull is bugling down in that canyon. And I mean, it was like thunder, man. You know, when you've heard some of these bulls that just rail and the hair on the back of your neck stands up. And when he grunts, it almost feels like a great, you know, like one of the great big rodeo bulls that you're next to, you know, in the chutes, when you just that feeling. I don't know if you guys have ever felt that when you're next to those big, vicious animals. That's what it felt like. And this bull was just going nuts, man. So he must have had one or two cows in there that were going crazy, because for one, he was just going absolutely insane. Now, the other thing that we didn't hear, that we heard down when those guys kicked him out, was there were several bulls in that bunch. Well, this seemed like the only one bull in there. But there were elk everywhere. There was probably 50 head with him. So that made it hard on us too. But we came down on him, tried to, Gage and I are super aggressive. Came down, got caught by the cows. Of course, he ran off again. And so we chased those elk around for hours in there. And then it started snowing on us. And we had left our packs back quite a ways, not our packs, but we left all of our good gear back, back by the Suzuki as we passed it to go up to chase these elk up. And one of the things that we left were our heavy coats, and it starts snowing on us. And we were chasing, you guys will see all this, by the way, it's all on film, but we're holding this film back because there's some things about this video that I think is going to speak really good to the hunting community. And I think it's going to talk to non-hunters as well about who we are as hunters. Anyhow, so this happened. We're chasing this bull around. We finally get him to where he's on the other side of the herd. He's on our side of the herd, and he doesn't have the herd between him and us. And we call him up, and Gage is getting down in. The wind's really shifty in there, and all I see are these antlers on this bull, and they're absolutely huge. Now, we're not like big antler hunters. Gage and I will shoot the first legal elk that we can get, because we believe that what we are as hunters is we bring clean meat to the house. That's really what hunting has been for thousands of years, and I think we actually sicken it when we start thinking that it's something other than that. Now, with that said, big antlers are cool. It's not that we go hunting big antlers. It's that we, when we get in them, of course we're going to go for the one that's got the big antlers. But if he's not, if we're not able to get him, we will get a cow. You could shoot a cow in this unit, and we'll shoot one gladly because we're looking really for the meat. But with that said, this bull comes out. He's huge. His front's curled back around, but I swear they were probably, at least 17, 18 inches long. And they curled back around, and that bull was walking away from Gage, not knowing that Gage was even there. Some of the cows were kind of like, yeah, this is not right. There's people here. I know that, this is a person on that bugle. So we're just kind of walk off. You know how cows do when they know something's up, but they don't quite know what's up. If you haven't been there yet, you will be. That's exactly what it's like. But anyhow, that's just what was going on. It was, these cows were kind of leading him away, and he's just following them. But he was 50 yards, 45 yards, courting away, not very strong, coming up the hill. And Gage could have shot him like 8 times. I mean, to the point was where Gage drew on him, but couldn't get an arrow out, couldn't bring himself to shoot because it was 50 yards probably. And it was tough. It was tough. This is like the third time that we'd drawn on animals. And with a new baby coming and an empty freezer, we didn't have any cattle that we were raised this year. We didn't have anything to fill the freezer with. And Gage was on his last leg of meat. To not be able to shoot that animal was really hard on us. It took us to a spot where we shouldn't be. And the only reason that we were having such a hard time with these things was the pressure, right? And so Gage lets down. We finally got so cold and it started getting dark on us. We were soaked to the bone because the snow wasn't really that kind of snow that sticks. It was just snow that snows. I mean, it stick about an inch and then it'd melt off, stick about an inch and melt off. And it was just soaking us. And finally, it was dark. It was getting so dark that we couldn't really tell. I mean, on the way back, we saw, 20, 30 elk just all over the place. And we couldn't get a shot. It was getting so dark at the end there that we couldn't even tell if it was a bull or a cow when we started seeing it. And we had to leave the next day. We had no more time. We had to be back. We'd already extended our trip beyond what we were saying we were going to do. And employers and Gage had to worry about getting back. And so we had to leave that and leave those elk without any meat. Now, thousands of years ago, that would probably mean that somebody would have not made it, right? We don't live in those times. I understand that. But that would mean that maybe the whole tribe didn't make it. Say people got in on a bunch of bison and they weren't able to seal the deal, right? They weren't able to kill those bison. And they came back to camp without anything in their hands. Could you imagine the letdown? See, because that's where rubber meets the road, really. That's where hunting is a real thing. It's not a sport. It's a means of survival. It's who we are as humans. And quite honestly, we have lived in such a padded society that we have made a sport out of something that is a life-giving thing. And the fact that we picked up traditional equipment when we could legally use something that was far more lethal. And you cannot tell me, there's nobody on this earth, there's nobody here that could tell me that they're as lethal with their traditional gear as you are with a compound bow. I picked up, the minute that I told some of my close friends that I was going to hang up the trad bow to hunt with elk this year, I'm going to hunt with other things. I'm going to still hunt with the trad bow. But until my freezer's full, I am not picking up that trad bow until my freezer's full. I just owe it to my family. It's hunting is for us is more than that. I grew up feeding myself with the food that I was harvesting. And we still do that to this day. And if we're not doing it for that reason, something is sick here. Something is wrong. And I think we as hunters need to understand that. Hunting is that. It's not to make like this fancy burger that we hand out to our friends and we're just meat eaters in that way, right? Where we're just going to eat it at this moment and then we'll give the rest of the meat away to somebody else. That's not it either. It's stores. We're putting up energy in our freezers. This is what we live on until the next time that we could harvest the meat. And some people say, well, why don't you just go down and buy it? Well, yeah, we do that, right? But that is not truly human either. Somebody else is killing my meat. I want to be honest about where my meat comes from. Another thing is I want good quality, clean, organic meat. And so for us to have to walk away with several opportunities and not putting that in, I had to really reevaluate why in the world am I carrying this gear and not, is it because, I know why I was back in the day is because it was what I knew how to hunt with. It was what I was able to harvest animals with. But now, man, people sent me bows when I told them that I was going to hunt with a compound. My friends, my close associates, you know, they sent me their backup bow or whatever. And I took that thing out, having it one day, and shot 50 yards and held a group. And this is totally legal equipment in Oregon, or any state for that matter, that I could bow hunt with. And that if I had this in my hands last year, Gage and I both would have filled our freezers. What are we hunting for? That's something you got to ask yourself. Now, it's different for everybody, right? And I'm not making moral arguments about you not picking up your traditional gear. And I'm not saying that I'm going to pick up a compound bow so I could go shoot 100 yards on an animal that I shouldn't be shooting 100 yards at. There's some animals you shouldn't be shooting 20 yards at. But what I am saying is we need to evaluate why we're hunting and why we're choosing what we're doing. And I'm telling you, if you're hunting for other purposes outside of feeding yourself and feeding the family, that's probably a hard thing to sell to the general public. And I mean that because I know guys want to challenge themselves, and those guys have full freezers. Don't get me wrong here. Please listen to what I'm saying, and don't. Listen to what I'm not saying, right? So what I'm saying is I know guys that go out and they're hunting the biggest animal they could get, and more power to them. You know why? Because their freezers are full of the animals that they're still processing through. And I have no problem with that, right? Because hunting is not just harvesting animals. It's not just filling your freezer. There's so much that goes along with it. That's why I say, you know, there's so much more to pulling a trigger. There is. There's so much more to hunting than pulling a trigger. But what I'm saying is, so they're going out and they're still doing that for that reason. But they don't have to come home and look at their family in the eye and say, I didn't get you anything. I spent all this time away from you. And you were looking forward to this meet. And now we're going to have to go down to the store and get it. That is just not right. That's not right. And so you're probably not going to see me carrying a traditional bow until my freezer's full again. It used to be easy to do that with trad gear and elk. It used to be a lot easier than it is now. A lot of my spots, maybe it's just because of the YouTube channel and people have figured out where we're hunting, but a lot of my spots are blown up. I mean, I could put a trail cam up there and see 10 different people go through. And you're never going to get an elk to act like an elk when there's 10 people tromping around in his beds, in his neighborhood. That's just not going to happen. And so good luck getting within 25 yards of that animal. It just doesn't happen anymore. It's Even when Kevin and I shot that bull up there, there were, and we called him within 20 yards. There was nobody in there. Nobody hunted those bulls that year. And now you get 10 people hunting the same bull. Things just change. And so those 20 yard shots are just a lot harder to justify. So with that said, when you see me packing a compound, understand that I'm a traditional hunter, that I'm bringing home meat, and I want to fill my freezer, and I want to fill it full so I don't have to rely on meat for the rest of the year. It's part of who I am. As there's a reason I live where I live. There's a reason that I hunt, and there's a reason that I garden, and there's a reason that that I gather. And I'm going to use every legal means to do that. And that's why I come and I had to put this out in a podcast to kind of, maybe you guys could reevaluate what you're doing. Are you hunting for the Instagram or for the YouTube or for the pictures? And if you, I mean, don't get me wrong, man. I have Instagram, I have YouTube, and I have pictures. But at the same time, the term hunter needs to be put forefront in front of a community that all eats meat in the right way and say, hey, look, I'm doing this because I'm taking care of my family and I'm taking care of my business. It's almost like my obligation, just like it was the obligation of men back in 500 years ago to take care of their families by going out and harvesting meat. So with that said, hopefully you guys don't hang me. Hopefully you guys aren't going to lynch me for going to the compound bow, but I am definitely filling my freezer. The minute that freezer is full, I'll probably throw, I love shooting Wade's bow and I love shooting Allen's bows, and I'll probably go right back and shoot those. Maybe I'll kill a bear with them. But until then, I got to fill my freezer, guys. And I think that's actually traditional hunting. We're not just packing around stuff in the woods. We're actually trying to fill our freezers. All right, guys, hopefully this didn't offend too many people, and hopefully you didn't throw me out, but I sure appreciate you listening. Please stay tuned. We got a lot of stuff coming down the pipe, and the life outdoors is really changing, and there's a lot going on, and it's interesting to see where this goes. So if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. Subscribe to all of our media. I think you guys will really get stuff out of it. We don't want to just be putting hunts out. We actually want to help encourage you, edify you, and educate. So we'll talk to you later. Thanks for listening. Until then, keep living.